Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
And that is a wrap on the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm Kevin Bowen. Eddie Garrison is with me. It's always one of my favorite podcasts of the year, Eddie, because I love just, you know, diving deep into each of these guys and just an educational process for me over the weekend. And hopefully you guys will feel that from a listening standpoint here on this Monday morning. So again, that's where we will have the focus today. Obviously, last Friday, Eddie, we dove deep into Laiatu Latu with the 15th overall pick. So that podcast, pretty centric there. I might throw a couple Latu notes into this week's pod and just kind of sprinkle those in on future pods. But I definitely want to make sure most of the focus today is starting with A.D. Mitchell and then going all the way through the man who thought he got pranked phone called, right?
Oh, that was great.
How great was that audio?
There's a couple of those that went around.
Jonah La'u'u, if I'm saying that correct. O'u, maybe, the pronunciation there. Always smart when the seventh-round pick calls the GM a badass. That's probably going to help you in trying to make the roster there. So lots to get into with these eight picks. I think before we go anywhere, Eddie, let's just start overall thoughts. Draft-wise for the Colts, you know, I had said to you on last week's podcast, you know, I set out kind of a very specific goal list for me with the Colts entering this year's draft cycle, and I think we have that, and I think you've kind of checked all of that off. By the way, before going any further, any apologies for audio issues we had on last week's pod? I think we got all that figured out. Some people have been messing with our controls in the studio, so apologies if anybody encountered that, but hopefully that won't be an issue today. But going back to that goal list, Eddie, you know, number one for me was, and it was 1 and 1A, you know, a Pro Bowl defender at a premium position. And I think in Laiatu Latu, you have that ability to have that. And then, you know, a pass catcher that grows alongside Anthony Richardson. And if you look at A.D. Mitchell, you know, they're only separated by 3.5 months, both of them 21 years old. So age-wise, you know, certainly fall in line there. And then, you know, goal number three was, can you find a mid-round pick that turns into a starting offensive lineman? And hell, they might have found two. I think for Tanner Bordellini, a guy that I had mocked to the Colts in round four, that to me is a little bit more obvious on paper. And like, okay, future center, you can kind of see it. Whereas Matt Gonsalves, I believe is how you say that. Gonsalves, it's a little bit more up in the air on exactly where he's going to fit into that. So that I think you have attempted to try and find. And then depth at linebacker, I do think Jalen Carlisle is a very intriguing position switch guy for modern day NFL, modern day defense in this league. You know, I also had mentioned depth at running back. They did not spend any of their nine picks there. But outside of that, man, I mean, you look at this goal list and it's like everything to me was at least attempted. You know, it's on paper. You got to develop, and you know, there's a whole lot that goes into turning this into action. But I think from the pre-draft goal list that I kind of set out for the Colts, a lot of it was checked off. I thought you saw a little bit of variety, not a ton, but you saw a little bit of variety from Chris Ballard in kind of shifting away from the pure relative athletic score with some of these picks. Again, not all of them, but some of them. And then I would say the other main takeaway is just the lack of a defensive back pick. You didn't have any until your seventh selection of the draft. We'll get into Jalen Simpson and Mike Abraham as we get into each of these selections. But, you know, I think one thing that I often hear is kind of a misconception is that Chris Ballard pre-draft presser, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's smokescreen central. And, I mean, yeah, Ballard's not showing you the draft board. But also, I think you have to realize that, you know, there's a lot of times Ballard is pretty truthful in those settings. Mm-hmm. And I think you heard that on a variety of levels. With that, that's why we try to recap that presser. And I think it's good to ask him, you know, non-draft board related questions, because I do think you get some answers there. And again, he sounds much more optimistic about his young defensive backs. And, you know, it's probably an element that I do. Well, I don't know if I agree with him on necessarily the rationale. I probably don't. But I've said several times throughout the offseason, Eddie, I'm more of a veteran addition additions in that room than I am draft addition. You know, if you think the number one corner in this draft class can be like a bona fide stud, then go ahead and pull the trigger there. That was my thought at 15 with Terrion Arnold. But if you don't, then probably just getting another guy in that room just to get another guy. I mean, theoretically, he's still going to have the same growing pains as the guys from last year's draft class. So that's where I look at the, again, raising of the floor of that room. And to me, that's where it comes veteran. And by all accounts, there's still some veteran names out there that you could find in that position room. So we'll see how that obviously evolves here coming out of the next couple of weeks. Anything big takeaway related from you before we get into each prospect, starting with A.D. Mitchell?
I just thought it was fascinating, like you mentioned, that, you know, Chris Ballard finally went away from the Raz a little bit and went with, you know, on-field production and what the tape told him versus what, you know, all the combine testing metrics and all that other stuff says. So I wonder if it is a little bit of Chris changing his ways and trying to find players that have been able to prove that they can play on the field based off of what they have versus trying to bank on the traits like they have in the past and it hasn't necessarily always worked out for him.
Yeah, and I like, again, I think I mentioned this a lot on the Friday podcast about Latu. I like a tweak. I like an adjustment. You know, the stubbornness nature, I think it's good to evolve in that manner. And, like, I don't want to act like he did it in some drastic way throughout these nine picks, but there are a couple of them that it doesn't scream that major relative athletic score. And so I think having that substance on film is really, really important. You know, a guy like Josh Downs, he's a damn good football player, even though, you know, maybe, again, from a size standpoint, he doesn't light up what you're looking for from a wideout point of view. All right, let's get into it, if you don't mind.
Yep, that's fine. I just want to list off some names here real quick of available free agent corners. Those of you that are wondering, Xavien Howard, J.C. Jackson, Adoree Jackson, Cameron Sutton, Stephon Gilmore, Patrick Peterson, Steven Nelson, Quan Williams, and Trey Herndon, and Eli Apple are the ones that kind of immediately stick out when looking at the available veteran cornerbacks. We already talked about now.
And hell, I think you could make the argument safety is more important than corner. I mean, if you really want to get into the nitty gritty of it, I think we got a few Twitter questions on that, so I'll hold off anything else till then.
Now, I've heard you pronounce it this way on the Colts website or one of the draft player profiles they put out. Is it Laiatu or Laiatu? Because I've heard you say Laiatu, but
I know.
Phonetically, I see them putting Laiatu, Latu.
Yeah, I mean, literally the phonetic spelling that the Colts sent us was L-A-Y, so isn't that lay?
Well, now it's L-I-E.
And then on the Colts website?
Yeah.
Oh, so they must have corrected that. Yeah, and that's how I think Goodell pronounced it. You know, it's funny, we asked him at the Friday press conference, he's like, can you pronounce your name for us? And he did, you know, he did it, and obviously does it very quickly. And then he's like, but just call me what? He's like, call me Latu. I'm like, all right, that's easy enough, so we'll call him Latu. So yes, there's the phonetic spell, or there's the pronunciation of Mr. Latu there.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
And round number two, 52nd overall, the 20th pick in the second round, the Indianapolis Colts selected wide receiver Adonai Mitchell out of Texas.
Yeah, A.D. Mitchell, obviously what a lot of people have kind of gone with there. Boy, there's a mouthwatering element to watching him catch the football. He makes it look easy. He makes it look fluid. The tall frame, the speed. And I would think the thing that stands out to me, Eddie, more than anything with A.D. Mitchell is in the biggest stages of college football he delivered. And it's astonishing to look at the college resume of him and be like, wait a minute, this dude caught touchdowns in the semifinal and the final as a true freshman at Georgia. Right here, a mile from here, less than a mile, 500 yards from here, Lucas Oil Stadium. He catches the go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter of that game against Bama. The next year, he catches touchdowns in the semifinal and the final. And then last year at Texas in their semifinal game against Washington, he catches another touchdown. Five playoff games, and he's caught touchdowns in those games. It's just, I mean, that is, do you wilt or do you rise to the occasion in those moments? And clearly, he did that. So that certainly stands out to you. I don't love the lack of yards after catch at all. Had one of the lowest number, especially of the major draft picks at wideout. I think part of that can be pointed to kind of the route tree that he runs. You know, it's predominantly a downfield route tree. So, you know, theoretically, unless you catch and break a tackle and just go, you know, you're not catching some maybe the underneath stuff and have the ability to make some plays. But I would have liked to have seen that element, again, explored a little bit more. I do think this has got to be viewed as a wake-up call for Alec Pierce as an outside wideout. You know, ironically enough, Eddie, Mitchell and Pierce were drafted just one spot apart if you compare them to each of their drafts. But the big change on that comes from the fact that what you have is you have Mitchell in a very deeper wideout class. So theoretically, again, maybe you're getting a more high-end talent there. You know, I've kind of labeled this a big Reggie Wayne pick because when you look at Mitchell and you look at 6'2 and 205, you look at 4'3 40-yard dash time, you look at 11 touchdowns in the Big 12 last year, led the conference, you look at the national semi and title game production, how did he last till 52? Why? Why does he not go earlier? Why did the Colts trade back from 46? I mean, the Colts had a need at wideout. Why not just take him there at 46? So when you get into that why, I think a couple things come to mind.
Well, Chris called it bullshit.
Chris Bowd extremely vocal about the off-the-field questions, however you want to label it. For those that maybe have missed it, basically, I think right after Mitchell got picked, NFL Network, I think, had a report of just some questions from some teams on maturity and consistency, et cetera, et cetera. And then Bob McGinn, who's covered the draft for a long, long time, he does an anonymous scouts report, and they were much more critical. And one of them, in fact, referenced as a type 1 diabetic, they saw some significant mood changes from Mitchell when he wasn't properly medicated. Now, that's one of the rare slash wild anonymous scout stories I've really ever heard. And Ballard, again, I think everyone by now has probably seen the very profane rant that he went on. And as much defending Mitchell as I thought just defending anonymous scouting, well, not defending it, ripping the anonymous scouting angle to it. And he did a very similar thing with CJ Stroud last year. And I think Ballard's issue is just he doesn't think that stuff should be aired publicly because behind the scenes, the Colts scouts are doing the same thing. It's just they're doing it behind the scenes, and they're not going anonymous scout route. I understand where Ballard's coming from. Now, at times, Chris Ballard himself has been an anonymous source for stories. So, like, should the anonymous source only be used when it's positive news? Should it not be used when it's, you know, negative news? And I hear people out there say, well, it's the draft day, you know, it's the day that these players should be celebrated. I'm like, yeah, I get that, but again, these guys fall, and I say that in quotes, for reasons. It's not like, you know, people pick and choose. Well, oh, yeah, we don't like him because whatever, his jersey number doesn't look good, so he's going to fall. I mean, there are some questions about him. I think if you watch the AD Mitchell Zoom press conference, you'll come away with that being like, man, that is a very I can get why, you know, he's kind of a polarizing figure to some. In that, you know, whatever. And all of us probably fall into this boat at 20 years old. We probably all, whatever, lacked some maturity. I can assure you, I certainly did at that age. Doesn't mean that the red flags are criminal. I think when people hear red flags, they immediately think, like, criminal reasons behind that. So I go back to the Reggie Wayne aspect of it, of just there needs to be more consistency from Mitchell, period. Like, you know, when you look at his games at Texas, and I thought it'd be easy just to do a Xavier Worthy comp because those two obviously played in the same offense. I want to say Mitchell in his 35, there was like maybe like 32 games in college. Only three of them were over 80 yards from a receiving standpoint. I think Worthy had like 14 of his 39 games, if I have that correct. So again, part of that can come from it's kind of boom or bust with Mitchell, of it's a downfield guy. But also, I just think furthering that consistency is needed there big time. And if you, you know, read whatever scouting reports on him, there's some questions about at times, you know, finishing off routes and running a full route tree and, you know, whatever, you know, full 110% effort, play in and play out. That's a little bit of a question, but certainly there's a ton to work with. And, you know, Shane Steichen was adamant on several occasions on Saturday following the draft of there's just an ease at which he can separate at the top of his routes. And I think that is a very in-depth but accurate way to describe what kind of separates, literally separates, wideouts and the potential to be NFL open versus college open. And if you can do that pretty easily at the college level, if you can nail that down even more at the NFL level when the coverage is inevitably a little tighter, then you can still create a pretty good window for your quarterback. So again, expect outside the numbers. I think expect some deep ball threat, but also I think what separates him and Pierce is maybe a little bit more of an ability to do some stuff underneath, even though Texas didn't really ask him to do a ton in that area. But I think that is kind of the hope with A.D. Mitchell. Had a huge game at Alabama this year. You want to talk about another kind of big-time environment for him. So, again, this is a traitsy guy, without question, with some nice production in big moments. Not great college production, but some nice production in big moments. Now the questions are, can you be a little bit more consistent? Can you round out the route tree? Can natural maturity occur? And if that, you've got a guy that we'll look back on in future drafts of, man, that wideout class was really deep. There was a reason why. 52 overall for a wideout in 2024 should have meant whatever, 25 overall in a given year, something along those lines. So I think that covers everything A.D. Mitchell related from me. Eddie, anything stand out to you?
I think I saw this, like the 33rd team or somebody tweeted this out, that he had the lowest drop rate among wide receivers who saw over 100 targets. In the last two seasons, he had one drop.
Right, yeah, six drops as a freshman at Georgia, but then just one drop the last 2 years. So, yeah, and for those curious why he might have transferred, got a young daughter from Texas, and I think that obviously played into transferring from Texas to Georgia, or from Georgia to Texas after, you know, having a great, great freshman season.
Yeah, the story on that and the letter that he wrote was fascinating. Did you read it?
Yes, I did. Yeah, to his daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
One of those Players Tribune type letters. So yeah, that was great. And again, you watch that Zoom, and it's a unique cat. I think when you say this term, like, it comes off as like a negative term, but I think there's a bit of a diva swagger nature to him. I mean, I asked him a point blank question, and I like to do this with a lot of prospects. I did this with Latu. How do you describe yourself as, in Latu's case, a pass rusher? In Mitchell's case, how do you describe yourself as a receiver? You know, Latu answers that question in a very, I've got multiple spin moves, or I've got multiple pass rushing moves. You know, he described the spin and the Euro step and the you know, speed to power and things like that.
Creating his own drills.
Yeah, that was kind of Latu's answer. I asked that to A.D. Mitchell, and the answer is two words. The best. That was it. I was like, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's not the answer that I'm like, you know, usually it's like, well, you know, I'm a deep ball guy or et cetera, et cetera. So again, there is a swagger. There is a divaness. There is a chip on the shoulder. There is however you want to describe it. Some teams described it in probably whatever. They looked at it in a little bit more of a negative light. Other teams might say, no, to play that position, you got to have that. If you're going to play as a true freshman at Georgia, and this was not some five-star recruit. He was not, you know, the can't-miss guy, top-10 prospect. To insert yourself into Georgia's offense and to catch the go-ahead touchdown in the national title game as a true freshman, you got to have some swagger.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have some of that. It's just a very different personality than Michael Pittman Jr., Alec Pierce, and Josh Downs. when you talk about those three guys. So that'll be really curious to, again, see Reggie Wayne's impression on the kid. Again, Reggie and Shane Steichen at the Pro Day at Texas and all of that. But there is a ton to work with, and the outside big play potential should be there. And again, you watch the highlights, and it is pretty looking. It is a smooth operator. That's a dude that, yeah, it looks right. It looks right. And honestly, you walk away from it thinking, okay, why 52? Why not 22? Like, what's there? And I just think it's a little bit of the consistency thing, but probably more, you know, on than off the field, but it's probably a little bit of both and why that wasn't tapped into anymore.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how it all plays out between him and Alec Pierce, because you would assume that Adonai Mitchell was going to come in with a chip on his shoulder, like you said, because you said he was pissed that he fell that far into the draft. And, of course, it's a prove it or lose it kind of year for Mr. Pierce.
Yeah, year 3 of 4 for him. And, you know, if you look at Pierce's snap counts last year, I mean, it was one of the highest in the NFL.
Yeah.
And you look at the catches, and obviously that didn't happen. So, you know, do you look at A.D. Mitchell splitting time with Pierce as kind of that other outside wideout? You know, do you feel like you're running Pittman into the ground, playing him as many snaps as he did? I'll be really interested to see how this move impacts that.
Mitchell was the first of 4 consecutive offensive picks for Chris Ballard in the 3rd round, 79th overall, the 15th pick in the 3rd round. It's not Matt Goncalves, not Matt Goncalves. It's Matt Gonzalez, offensive tackle from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that pronunciation is going to take a while for me. Matt Gonzalez, is that what we're going with?
Yes.
Ooh, boy. Trade up, Eddie.
That's right.
Rare, very rare. Just a few spots. I'd heard some rumors the Colts liked a couple DBs here in round 2 and round 3 that went just before these picks. So I'll be interested to see. You know, it's kind of the fun thing with the draft. You just never know how it could have unfolded for teams. But, yes, Gonzalez, you know, the interesting aspect to him is he only played 3 games his senior year. He was a all-ACC third-teamer the year prior, and then suffered a foot injury and, again, only played 3 games. The Colts clearly love him. You know, Chad Henry, the area scout, talked about he's the blueprint. He's exactly what we look for in an offensive lineman. You know, Ballard said, you know, he was, you know, on the board at the time. They thought, you know, everything that they look for, you know, from an O-line standpoint. He even mentioned kind of when you look at the entire draft, he checked so many boxes from an offensive line standpoint. I'd say, well, you know, if you look, A.D. Mitchell might have had this for some people too. I think there was some A.D. Mitchell talk from some people, like maybe even late round 1, whereas it's kind of the flip for Gonzalez. Like I saw some mid-day 3 chatter for him. I think this was a little bit earlier than most thought. Now, let's go back to the Alec Pierce where he was drafted compared to A.D. Mitchell. What was this, 79 overall? Is that right?
Sounds about right.
For Gonzalez?
Yes.
You know, Bernard Raimann was drafted in a very similar spot. And when we did the pod the Monday after the draft, Ryman's year, it was like, the thought there is he's your left tackle of the future. With Gonzalez, I don't know where I would pin him in terms of, you know, this is your guy of the future, per se. Like, I don't necessarily have this great grasp on, like, no, he's here, he's there. And it doesn't sound like the Colts have that either. They're very much like maybe tackle, maybe guard. You know, the resume in college was all tackle. 13 starts at right tackle, 11 at left tackle. He did play some left guard, but start-wise, it was at, you know, both those tackle spots. You know, captain, again, the injury took him out of, he was East-West. Maybe it was a Shrine Bowl. I forget one, which one. But I'm very, like, I'm confused on where the fit is. And I should say just uncertain. And, you know, part of that is life as a draft pick. Braden Smith was thought to be what? A right guard. And now he's been a right tackle. So part of that comes with offensive line play. But I just don't know exactly. Like, is he challenging Will Fries for a day 1 starting job?
Uh-huh.
Does the foot injury impact? Now, he did his pro day a couple weeks ago. But, you know, is it more of a swing tackle? You know, where is Blake Freeland after a year in the weight room, et cetera, et cetera? And you don't see many guys drafted this early, I guess, with just 3 games on their senior year resume. He had several profanities on the draft call. I think you all saw that.
That was great.
He sounds, you know, very intense from that aspect to it. I enjoyed the conversation with him. You know, it's hard to look at his testing numbers again because he had the foot injury. You know, so just you don't have a great depiction on exactly athletically where he's at. So, yeah, I think that pretty much checks everything on the Gonsalves front. Obviously, the Colts have a firsthand impression of him, courtesy of Charlie Partridge in their D-line room, who obviously was at Pittsburgh last year. So, yeah, where is his fit? I don't have a great understanding of that for you. So we'll see how that all plays out. But, again, to trade up for a guy, you clearly love him. Clearly love him. So, yeah.
You mentioned Bernie. He was selected 77th overall.
And I guess what I wanted to add to that, and thank you for bringing that back up, Eddie, is like, again, the thought here is this guy more of a, he is a deep, deep draft pick, or excuse me, he's a draft pick in a deep, deep offensive line draft class.
Yeah.
So like with Ryman, if I'm not mistaken, like Ryman was one of the like the handful of tackles that have been taken to that point. How many tackles do we see going round one this year on Thursday night? I mean, we saw like seven.
I think it was eight, nine, was maybe? Eight?
I mean, it was a huge number. So is Gonsalves looked at as a, yeah, he might have been the whatever, 13th, 14th tackle taken. But again, in most years, he is more than that, or he's better than that, I should say. But, you know, part of it's credit to the Colts offensive line, and part of it is just, you're unsure given his college resume, you don't know exactly where that fit is going to be at the next level.
Lance Zierlein, he works for the NFL Network. He does a lot of the player profiles and such and does draft or NFL comparisons.
Good buddy Chris Bowers.
Oh, that is right, yeah. Mm-hmm. His comp for Matt Gonsalves was Jeff Schwartz.
Ooh, little throwback there. Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, right?
That is correct.
Like Jeff Jenkins.
In the fourth round with the 17th pick in the round, 117th overall. He's a guard or a center to be determined. Tanner Bordellini out of Wisconsin.
Hey, we got one right in the mock. Tanner Bordellini, round four. He's got a mullet. Do you need to say
he's not afraid to show it off.
Not afraid to show it off. Showed it off in the Zoom. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why I mock this guy to the Colts. Super athletic. You know, it's easier to put on strength than it is to put on athleticism. So, you know, this one to me kind of jumped out. As a Colts draft pick, he's smart. Went to Wisconsin. Chris Ballard went to Wisconsin. He's got a mullet. Yeah, it just checks, you know, so many boxes. And, you know, I've said this numerous times throughout the offseason. I thought this draft provided the opportunity to find a potential center of the future. And that's exactly what this pick screams to me. That's the goal. The hope there is you don't necessarily maybe need him year one. I mean, hell, Gonsalves and Bordellini in a perfect world, Eddie, they probably don't play in 2024. You know, I mean, if you have last year's offensive line health, you know, Blake Freeland was obviously needed. Well, if Freeland's ahead of Gonsalves here in year two, then, you know, you might not need these guys. But again, Bordellini, he's got to take that torch from Ryan Kelly at some point. Kelly's a free agent. Kelly turns, what, 31 next week, maybe 32, something like that?
Yeah.
You know, if he plays another year, then, you know, Bordellini, whatever, maybe challenges at right guard. Again, you know, you have some position flex ability with him interior-wise because he lined up a ton of spots, a ton. I think it was 13 at center. I want to say 8 starts at left guard and then a couple, I want to say, on the right side at right guard and right tackle as well. But again, small town Wisconsin kid, mom's a basketball coach, comes from a family. You know, sports obviously means a lot. Had some Ivy League offers coming out. But yeah, crazy athlete tester at the combine. Like speed wise numbers, you know, combine is rarely seen.
What, like a 4.99, right?
Yeah, and even the other stuff. 40? You know, when you're talking, you know, broad jumps and short shuttles and 10-yard splits and all that. And you know, I don't think I need to remind our audience too much too of like the center history with this franchise.
Right.
You know, Peyton Manning speaks for itself, but I mean, can we name all the centers Andrew Luck had? until Ryan Kelly in 2016?
Oh, boy.
Samson Satele? Khalid Holmes?
Austin Blythe, or was that his name?
Ooh, Austin Blythe. Did he get a center snap?
I think so.
He had a nice career after he left here. Shout out Jonathan Harrison. Jonathan with a couple of H's, if I'm not mistaken. How about A.Q. Shipley?
Oh, yeah.
Legend.
Can't forget about him. He went on to Arizona, right?
Such a revolving door for luck. So, obviously, the hope here is you now stay. Now, Ryan Kelly's had the revolving door of quarterbacks he's had a snap to since Andrew Luck. The goal is to shore that up on both ends. So, Anthony Richardson, Tanner Bordellini. There you go. Senior Bowl guy as well.
Fitting. Had to get one of those in there, didn't we?
Had to.
All right, in the final of the four consecutive offensive picks was another wide receiver, Anthony Gold, with the 142nd overall pick, the first of three picks in the fifth round. This was the seventh pick. He's from Oregon State.
Yeah, this might be my favorite selection just because I love the outside of the box thinking a little bit here.
Yeah.
Of the rule change. And, you know, I've kind of dove deep into this rule change looking specifically at the kick return. And the kick return is going to look a lot like a punt return now. You know, when you think of, and we're going to nerd out here, but you think of a punt return skill set, it's probably more lateral than it is straight line speed. You know, you've got guys right in your face pretty early.
Yeah.
Once you feel that. Whereas a kick returner, you can get that head of steam for 10, 15 some yards, maybe even more than that. So I think you're more inclined to put the jitterbug at punt return, who might lack size, than you would put that guy at kick return. Well, now with the new rule changes, again, I think the kick return is more like a punt return skill set. So that's where Gould, I think, comes into play. 5'8". Not big at all, but damn, the punt return numbers are crazy. He actually only returned one kick in his college career, so he really didn't do it. But punt return-wise, he averaged for his career 16.4 yards per punt return. And it's not like he had six returns for a touchdown that can really skew it.
Yeah.
You know, he had two, which is a nice number, obviously, but that doesn't skew that stat as much as I think it would do some other areas. So this is just a nice attempt on day three of let's try to inject a little life into a new rule change with returns increasing. And if you can eliminate, like, think about it. If you look at drive start stats, like if you start in the 28 versus the 34, it is amazing to me the percentage of increase in like 6 to 8 yards for a drive start.
Yeah.
And if you can eliminate a first down every couple of kick and punt return opportunities, man, can that do wonders for you. I never loved Josh Downs as a permanent guy back there. I never loved Dallas Flowers as a permanent guy back there. They have two, you know, valuable roles on offense and defense, in my opinion. So this is a guy that, you know, he's a gadgety player for your offense. And I trust Shane Steichen to sit there one Saturday night and think, we haven't dialed up Anthony Gould in a while. Let's throw that into the old playbook here. Coming up on Sunday, you might catch a defense off guard. You know, think a little bit of what's the guy for Jacksonville? Always seems to torch the Colts. Jamal Agnew?
Yep.
Always seems to torch the Colts. That sort of element to your return game and then potentially to your offense. He had three plays over 50 yards offensively, if you want to look at it from that angle. So, again, he ain't big. 5'8", 174. But there is a jitterbug element to this. So I think it's a really, really smart move by Chris Ballard and company, Brian Mason, their special teams coordinator, to take an attempt at this and see if you can tap into a rule change that I would expect to be there permanently.
I know this is something we will get into down the line when it comes to the 53-man roster, but things now look very interesting in how you shape the roster outside a wide receiver, because now you have six wide receivers, you assume, that will be on that 53-man roster because you know how they feel about Ashton Doolin.
Right,
so.
And think about 5 and 6. I mean, special teams, right?
Yeah.
You know, Doolin's history and then that. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we'll get into that more, but, you know, right now that running back depth chart doesn't look very deep. So, you know, does that mean you're keeping one short at running back? You know, do you keep one short potentially at tight end? You know, how exactly do you view that there? So, yeah, I thought this was a really interesting and smart move by the Colts.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Their second pick in the fifth round, I think, is the diamond in the rough. This screams a Chris Ballard pick. It was a very weak linebacker class, so they take a guy who's played both linebacker and safety, and it sounds like they're just going to make him a straight linebacker. With the 16th pick in the fifth round, 151st overall, the Indianapolis Colts selected Jalen Carlees out of Missouri.
Yeah, I think, and again, who knows what the pronunciation guides are really going to say. I think it's Carlees.
Carlees, yeah.
Like, lock it in here. Modern day linebacker, Eddie, right?
Yep.
I'm with you. This is intriguing to me. You know, big, very big for a safety. I mean, 6'2", 227, right?
Physical.
Ran 4.5. I mean, this just screams kind of Colts linebacker with it. Ironically enough, you know, he was a wideout in high school, and the only team that thought he could play defense, the only school, was Missouri. And at the time, Missouri's defensive coordinator was Ryan Walters, now the Purdue head coach. And Ryan Walters obviously has some very strong history when it comes to the defensive backs and just in general defensive side of the football, projecting them to the NFL. So this is one that, you know, again, a linebacker pick I thought needed to be there on day three. He played in a 4-2-5 scheme. So when you think about that extra DB, there are some linebacker, you know, necessities needed there. And, you know, Eddie, think of the position room he's walking into. Cato June is that. Cato June was a college safety turned into a linebacker. Richard Smith, the longtime linebackers coach, he comes from, you know, Oakland, where at the time the Raiders had Divine Diablo, who's, you know, been kind of in that sort of role as well. So this is an intriguing one to me of, okay, he's an inconsistent tackler at times. Thought there is, all right, if you're at safety, it's more of a full head of steam. You're more, whatever, prone to be out in space, et cetera, et cetera. If you're playing linebacker, it's shorter areas. So if you've got length and you've got speed, that should help you out. You know, a lot of that stuff checks. And I think in today's NFL, this stuff needs to be explored to try and take away opposing tight ends. You know, do you have kind of that tight end chess piece? I think EJ Speed at times, you know, can be a nice player in coverage. You know, there were some moments I thought last year where teams try to really expose, you know, whether it's Zaire Franklin or just the Colts in general, and getting a little bit of running back tight end, you know, aspect to them. And again, there were some nice moments from Speed and Franklin in coverage, but still, I think that's ever evolving for you as a defense. So, you know, this is a pick that, whatever, 4 or 5 years ago might have looked a whole lot different. But I like this attempt at getting a little bit more speed, get a little more length out there, and kind of fits what the Colts mode is. On day three, position switch time. Okay. He seems very open to it. And see what you have in, you know, potential linebacker.
Carlees was the first of four consecutive defensive players to conclude the draft. Their last pick in the fifth round was the 29th pick overall in the round, 164th overall in the draft. Cornerback, the first time they go secondary, was Jalen Simpson out of Auburn.
Yeah, he's got a little SEC swagger to him. He does. I got a feel on that Zoom call. This is a guy that he's got the gift of gab a little bit here. It sounds like cornerback first for him, but I am curious about free safety. He mentioned free safety as something the Colts discussed with him back early in the draft process, but it sounds like the first crack will be at corner. Now, 5'11", 179, that screams corner, obviously. You know, pretty good ball production with 21 passes defensed in his 23 starts, 7 picks. You know, this is one kind of like Gonzalez, Eddie, where I'm like, all right, what is going to be the exact fit there? You know, is it outside corner at that size? Again, does he get a look at free safety? I mean, do you think to yourself, hey, free safety, last line of defense, you need uber cover, you know, strike back there. Had to get a good stretch in. Is that where you kind of view him at and project him to the next level? Tested very well at the combine. You know, big time 40. If you label him as a safety, you know, big time 40, a big vertical jump, bigger broad jump, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I am. It's not like not like Marvel Tell vibes with this selection, but the size is really throwing me off. A 5'11", 179, where exactly that? I mean, that doesn't even scream outside corner. You know, when you think about a Chris Bauer defense or a Gus Bradley defense, typically. So, you know, 23 starts in the SEC, granted for a bad SEC team, but still, that is, you know, a nice number here for the last couple of seasons. So yeah, where exactly he fits, I'll be curious about. It's just, it is, you know, still a bit kind of crazier. You could have won a lot of money if you would have bet your buddies, hey, the Colts aren't going to take a DB until the seventh selection of the draft.
I wouldn't have pegged it that far down, but I was one of the few that didn't think it would be an early pick.
Right, right. And yes, you were, but I mean, again, seven, I mean, geez. Yeah, that's just kind of crazy. So the next guy, I think we kind of know where he's going to be positionally, but this DB, I'll be interested to see how his first year plays out.
The next guy,
where Jalen Simpson fits.
Had a Colt connection to the draft because he played with the brother of a former Colt. Do you recall which Colt that would be?
Sadly, I do. You want to know why?
Why is that?
Max Bone was born on September 9th.
Yep.
2022. Notre Dame played Marshall.
Yep.
On September 10th. 2022. The younger brother of Stephon Gilmore had a pick six in that game.
That would be correct.
And this man, Micah Abraham, also had an interception in that game.
That's right.
Can I cuss?
I mean, it's podcast form.
How the hell did we lose a frickin' Marshall? I mean, unbelievable. Max Bowen's first day on this earth, and we're losing to Marshall.
We had audio problems there. I'm sorry. I didn't expect a Kevin Bowen yell today.
Gosh.
Did you break your wrist over there? Or you break your hand at all with that?
Unbleeping believable. I couldn't believe it.
As you can guess there, round six, 201st overall, Micah Abraham, cornerback, Marshall.
Well, obviously, Eddie, my first thought was when I saw Marshall, I'm like, oh, man. And I thought to myself, their DBs just ate Notre Dame up on that Saturday afternoon.
Did anyone ask you anything about him in the media room there at West 56th Street when the pick was made?
Let's just say I kept my composure better than I just did right there.
Okay, that's good.
I've grown up. I've become a father of two. Well, I guess I was a father of two at that very moment, but I needed a little maturity I needed. Which, you know, you could say the same thing about some of these draft prospects. You know, this is the one that doesn't stand out from the Raz score. I mean, 5'9", 185. Again, that is not corner at all, but serious ball production. I mean, serious ball production. Set a school record, 55 passes broken up. Started 46 games, 12 picks. Father played in the NFL for, you know, a good while, Donnie Abraham. I don't even think Chris Bauer knew this, but... Tim Jennings is his cousin, which ironically enough, you think Tim Jennings, former Colts corner, former Bear corner. You know, he similar size, similar kind of stature there. Started at safety, moved to outside corner. He's played in the slot. So, you know, I think I've said to you, Eddie, when I think of the corner need for the Colts, I almost look at it a little bit more slot insurance. You know, if Kenny Moore goes down, it can be DEFCON. So... You know, does Micah Abraham make the team? And to make the team, he's going to have to show some versatility at corner. Obviously, special teams, you know, once you get into what? He was round six, right?
Yes.
Yeah, round six. So, yeah, visit the Colts for a top 30. He's got pretty good speed to kind of offset that. But, yeah, Micah Abraham, major ball production, intriguing slot option for me. I like this. This kind of falls into a little bit more of the substance, more so than the testing guy. You know, can it be a sticky slot option for you? I'll be curious.
And the final pick for the Indianapolis Colts in the 2024 NFL draft was at a position I didn't think they would address at all. Defensive tackle Jonah Laulu from Oklahoma, 234th overall.
Traits. That's it. I mean, it's purely a traits pick. Let me read off the Jonah La... What'd you go with?
Laulu.
Yeah, that works for me. Let me read off his senior year resume. 13 games played, so he's healthy.
Yeah.
Played in 13 games, started three of them. 11 total tackles, 3 tackles for loss and 1 sack. for the entire season.
Okay.
That sounds like a Leatu Latu game.
Yeah.
And that's what he had his whole year. So again, this is a scream of a trades pick. I mean, even if you looked at his entire career, he played 66 college games.
Oh, yeah.
Four at Hawaii, 4 years at Hawaii, 2 years at Oklahoma. If you look at his entire career.
He's 24, right?
Yes, one of the older prospects in the entire draft. You know, 10.5 sacks through six seasons. So, again, this is a pick that just screams traits over production. And, you know, Ballard can't totally get away from himself. And I get it. You know, when you get to pick 234, let's go to your position you believe in probably the most. And an interior defensive line is one he loves to invest in. So here you go. But this is just, I mean, this has got to be practice squad, right?
I would hope.
I mean, this is Titus Leo, Jake Witt. I mean, and it's probably a disservice to even Leo especially, maybe even Witt, that, you know, you would compare his production. Now, you know, he's playing Oklahoma. Don't act like he was playing at freaking nowhere, but still. That stat line, of course, is not going to get you picked very, very high. So, yeah, incredible testing athlete, though, when you look at the length and you look at 6'5 and 300 and the ability to move like that. So, really genuine dude. Really enjoyed him telling a story. I mean, hell, you all saw the call with, you know, he thought Chris Bowers was pranking him. And, you know, again, calling your GM a badass like you did is probably a good step in trying to make the football team. So, yeah, really, really interesting selection here. And much more of the normal kind of Chris Ballard feel to it.
If you are interested in reading Kevin's work on all of these draft picks, go to 1075thefan.com, and then you can go to either Colts coverage or if you go, like, I think it's underneath the blog section.
Yeah, Kevin's Corner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can see all of your written content.
What 10 total articles, I believe, we have up there.
Yep. And then you've got one up right now that we'll probably discuss at a later time, but if you have nothing else to add on the Colt selections, you ready to get into the Twitter questions that we have?
Yeah, I do have that 10 takeaway story up on the site. I always do an annual winners and losers of the draft. I think I'll post that tomorrow morning. We can probably get into that on next week's pod. Sometime in May, we'll get to kind of projecting that early rookie playing time. I always kind of like to look at a depth chart, and we do that 1 to 10 ranking of, okay, how early do you think these guys can get on the field? Some of them I'm already very torn on, kind of thinking about that out loud. And then, yeah, rookie mini. I think we'll get Gonzalez. I think we're going to get him on the show here at some point, so we'll throw that up on the podcast. You guys are getting A.D. Mitchell, is that right?
I believe so. That's to be determined.
So we'll keep an eye out on that. But unless you got anything to add, Eddie, let's go to Twitter questions.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Up first is Wake Spike. Hey, guys. What pick or player do you feel like the Colts almost had but just missed out on? For me, it was Kool-Aid McKinstry in the second round.
What number did Kool-Aid go? I was monitoring Pacers Wild Game 3 at that same time.
And you think I would know that?
I know, exactly. It's just a dumb thing to ask you. Because Colts went, what? They traded back from 46 to 52. I felt like Kool-Aid went like around 40-ish.
Kool-Aid McKinstry was selected 41st, right after Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, he had a little bit of DB run there. Where was the Sainstrill kid, the Michigan kid? Where did he go?
50.
And the Colts went 52?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one that, I mentioned him. I mentioned the DB from USC in round 3. I think those are a couple that I it's just a crazy nature to the draft of, like,
Kalen Bullock?
Yeah. It's just the crazy nature of the draft, of how wild it can be. I mean, again, I said this to you on Friday. I think there was a lot of Shane Steichen and Brock Bowers interest as well. It's just, you know, how Bill Polian has told the story, Jim Irsay certainly told the story, of they literally have the card in to draft Clay Matthews in 09. Literally have it in.
Mm-hmm.
And the Packers have not traded up in how many years? I mean, they just never did it as a franchise. And boom, they come screaming up and they get Matthews before you. It's just, it's wild to think of those stories. You know, I know Jordan Spieth, ironically enough, has told the story in the Saints draft room back in 2017 of like they were taking Patrick Mahomes. And then boom, here comes Kansas City up from 27 or wherever it was, and there you go. So, yeah, it is a wild nature to the draft. So, I think there was some DB interest, but not to the level of, like, they felt like it was an absolute must to come away with. And, I mean, hell, look at, you know, you imagine how different round one could have been? Did Mike Chappell had Malik Nabers, right? He said that was the name they were looking to trade up for him. You imagine trading from 15 to 5?
Yeah, Chap had Nabers, and then I think Nate Atkins with the star said it was Odunze or Harrison.
I mean, think about that. 15 to 5, what that would look like. I mean, that would mortgage pretty much, you know, any significant value of the rest of your draft, really.
It's just fascinating to me. It's like people were griping about Ballard not being able to get something done. It's like, well, you can get something done. You just have to be willing to mortgage more. I'm like, think about it. I mean, like you said, it takes two to tango. Like,
especially in round one.
Like,
you
imagine
know,
the team being that high up. Like, you suck anyway. You're that high up, and you're going to miss out on one of the top players. You got to feel like you got to get a player that can start for you right away and return at 15, let alone probably another valuable pick.
Yeah, and again, especially in round one. I mean, we saw only one trade, you know, before the Colts there early on. So, certainly.
Country boy Edie. Is it Edie or Eddie?
Well, it depends. Do you want to be biased or do you want to say it's a West Lafayette person?
That's the problem. I don't know.
Or a Toronto person for Zach Edie.
That could be correct. His question or her question, do you view the Gonzalez pick as more of a depth pick or potentially a push to replace Will Fry's selection? Some analysts seem to think he fits better as a guard, and the fact the Colts traded up and selected him fairly early in round three seems a bit rich to be purely a depth piece. Thanks.
Well, certainly down the road, he's got to be a starter. I mean, you don't draft an offensive lineman, let alone trade up early in round three, and don't think that. But again, they don't even know that sort of position. So is it, yeah, I mean, is it the long-term right tackle? Again, Blake Freeland. I mean, Blake Freeland was only drafted one round later than this guy. You know, what does second-year development look like for Freeland in the weight room? You know, does he push Fries this year? Does he take over for Fries? Is he in a contract year? Is it key depth? Yeah, all of those are, I wish I had, like, more of an answer, but I don't think the Colts have a great, great answer to it. And again, he only played three games in that final year at Pittsburgh, and it's not like he got the all-star experience to, like, hey, you know, you're going to try a bunch of positions here. And so, you know, we can get a glimpse of you at the next level a little bit here. So, yeah, I think those are very, very interesting here.
Since our last podcast, Matt Ryan announced his retirement from the NFL and major shakeup with CBS NFL Today as well. Boomer Esiason and Phil Sims are out. Matt Ryan going into the studio.
I think the booth probably fits him a little better than the analyst role.
Did we get many opportunities or experiences with him in the studio, though?
I thought he did a playoff game, maybe, the year he was with the Colts. Like, he went in there for one of those playoff Saturday or Sundays, but I could be wrong. There's just too many people on those damn shows. I mean, way too many. Too many mouths to feed.
Well, he would know all about that, wouldn't he?
He's got three. He's not in the Rivers camp.
No, I'm talking about being a quarterback.
Oh, I got you. I thought you meant how many kids he has. No. To feed. Shows you where my head's at. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Maybe not so much here.
Certainly in those ATL days.
The Colts didn't support him, and he did not support the Colts.
Three questions left. Dakota is up first. Kevin, I did some quick research on the late round picks, and it seems like all the defensive guys have a knack for creating turnovers over the high-profile athletic traits. Do you think this was Chris Ballard emphasizing the mix of college production with athletic potential?
Yeah, I do. Again, I don't want to act like this was, you know, there was a point after the Latu pick, Eddie, where I probably even said to you on Friday, I'm like, wait, is this going to be the whole draft? and then it really wasn't. Now, again, Gonzalez, you look at his pro day numbers, they're not great RAS numbers, but you also can't say that without acknowledging he's come back from the foot injury. You know, Bortolini, crazy athlete. A.D. Mitchell, crazy athlete. I guess a lot of it's probably where you label Carlisle. Hell, Carlisle is even a pretty good, damn good athlete for a linebacker too. Or safety, I guess, however you want to look at it. So, but still, there are some. I mean, Micah Abraham, I just mentioned. You know, that is a lot more, you know, tape substance than trait substance. So, it was like, to say that normal Ballard drafts, I'd probably put the normal Ballard drafts at 10 on a 1 to 10 scale, like pure Raz, relative athletic score, I'd probably put this at like 6.8,
7.2. We're going with the points here too. Wow.
Oh, I mean, it's an Olympic year.
Oh, I know.
How do you not? I mean, we got some huge judging that'll be going on.
That's right.
From Paris.
Flippin' asks, drafting A.D. Mitchell, the beginning of the end for Alec Pierce.
Boy, I don't think I'm that harsh on it. I mean, that's the beginning of the end. I mean, that, you know, that sounds like a 30 for 30 line as they lead into the next segment. But again, I think people would be stunned how many snaps Alec Pierce played last year. I mean, it was right up there with anybody in the league at the wideout spot. And how many catches did he have for the whole year? I did the exercise a few weeks ago. I probably should look it up. Let me see if I have time to look it up. Now, again, I think a big reason why you see where Pierce and Mitchell were drafted, I want to reiterate the difference in the draft depth from those two spots.
Alec Pierce played the most snaps
of any wideout.
Of any offensive player.
Unbelievable. All right.
Of the skilled positions.
I knew I had it somewhere, right? Okay, give that to us again. I have led all wideouts in snaps. That's what I had. You have all skill players, which that makes sense. Running back or tight end is going to supersede him.
1,090.
And I believe he had the 135th most catches in the league. Most snaps and 135th in most that those two numbers should correlate. They're not correlating there.
Now, is that the quarterback last year, or was that?
There's plenty of context. I'm just saying that to give you the info, and then we can add the context on it.
Oh, yeah. 32 catches.
Yeah. You know, it's less than two a game. Did he miss a game? I don't think he did.
Nope. Played all 17.
Yeah. So, obviously, there's some context behind it, but you still got to have more.
Yeah.
You just do. You can't be, I mean, you can't be out there and be a decoy like that for all of that time. It's crazy. I mean, when I looked that up a few weeks ago, it is crazy. I was going to get to it at some point, but clearly we're getting to it now. I guess going back to the question, again, I think Mitchell was a little bit more well-rounded. If you look at, like, there's a lot of their physical makeup that's pretty similar. The size, the weight, the 40-yard dash time. But I think Mitchell's a little bit better at the kind of getting in and out of breaks and that stuff. You know, again, go back to the Steichen comment. Steichen mentioned several times the ease at which Mitchell creates separation at the top of his routes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that is something that you would throw in there as well. So, you know, the thought here is, of course, you're tapping into this wideout depth. That's exactly what you're doing. And who do you have the draft results pulled up, Eddie? I know we're going a little long on this podcast, so I want to get to
in general.
Will you rattle off second round? Let me see if I can pull it up too.
Are you talking about overall here?
Yeah, I was curious at that trade back again. I was, as you were at that point, I was counting how many offensive rebounds Andrew Nembhard was getting against the Timberwolves.
Okay, you want me to go the entire second round here? Or
no, just 46 to 52.
All right, so from 46, that was Jonathan Brooks. That's who Carolina took, the running back out of Texas. Tyler Newbin, a safety from Minnesota, went to the New York Giants at 47. Pick after that, Mason Smith is a defensive tackle from LSU. He went to the Jaguars at 48. Another defensive tackle from Michigan, going to the Cincinnati Bengals by the name of Chris Jenkins at 49. At pick 50, Mike Sandrichel, is that how you say the name?
Sure, whatever.
That one always butchers me with all those eyes in there. He went 50. He's a cornerback out of Michigan. 51, West Virginia center Zach Frazier went right before Adonai Mitchell at 52.
Boy, it's kind of crazy. After that Jalen Polk pick earlier in the second round, then we had a long wait until the next wideout. The next wideout was Mitchell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just one of those things where you look at, there's so much of you look at Mitchell's resume and you say, wait, that dude was a 10th wideout selected?
Yeah.
Like, what? How? Why? And I think that's the intriguing part of it is just like, more so than really anybody. I mean, I'm trying to think of anybody else in this draft class. Take out Laulu there, the 7th round pick. He's probably the most moldable clay of anybody.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at it, everybody else, substantial, you know, play time. And he's got, I don't want to act like the dude had no production whatsoever. I mean, hell, he led the Big 12 in touchdowns last year. It was more of just the consistent production and really just kind of the one big year of it at Texas. High ankle, I think he had, year two at Georgia, which really limited some of that.
What, he had, what, like 11 touchdowns? Was that the 11, number?
Yeah,
11 on 55 catches?
At Texas, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unreal. By the way, he is going to be a weapon in the red zone.
He will be, certainly.
I'll be fascinated to see how many snaps where it's him and Pierce on the outside and they move Pittman to the inside.
And I guess just to answer that question a little bit more in depth, because I know we went way, way around it. I see like a, you know, again, Pierce and Pittman played 98% of the snaps, something like that. You know, Pittman's maybe a little bit less. Let's say you keep Pittman at that number. You know, do you bring Pierce all the way down to like 50? And then does Mitchell take the rest? Is that kind of how you look at it? Do you still eat a little bit from Pittman and you slide, you know, Mitchell over there as well? That's kind of how I view it.
You don't see him as a guy that could eat a little bit at all three, like to try to keep those guys all fresh longer?
Because I mean,
like,
Downs is just such a unique guy. I mean, I don't know. Does Anthony Gould eat into Downs a little bit?
Yeah.
You'd obviously have to see how that plays out. But I think specifically to the Pierce question, that's how I kind of view it. Again, I don't think it's over for Pierce. But Anthony Richardson better save him.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Final Twitter question comes from Zach. Now that the draft is over, do we see Ballard make some moves for a veteran corner or safety? It's become clear that he's being more aggressive than years past and signing veteran corners is in his wheelhouse. With what, with that, if you were in Ballard's shoes and needed to make a realistic trade for a corner, who would you want and why?
Well, you mentioned some of those corner names earlier. I know Steven Nelson has kind of been a popular one that a lot of fans have gone with. I'm going to go back to what I said earlier, man. I think you make the argument safety means more than corner.
Justin Simmons?
Yeah, that's obviously the big one. Condre Diggs, right? That's the other big one. So I think a Nelson, but again, safety, I just, because the other thing I think about safety is you only re-signed Julian Blackman for 1 year. Like, you've got immediate concerns, and I think you've got long-term questions at safety as well. And it's not like, I guess, Daniel Scott coming off a torn ACL maybe falls into this category, but it's not like you've got anybody, Eddie, that's like, oh, no, he just needs playing time.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen Rodney Thomas a good amount. We've seen Nick Cross at this point for a handful of starts. Now, again, maybe he needs more than that, but 2 years in, you're like, wait a minute, you can't crack more than that? Like, so that's where I'm just a little confused at that aspect to it. Now, again, Latu and company up front, they can help you out. And yeah, I mentioned earlier with Tanner Bordellini, it's easier to put on strength than it is to put on athleticism. I think it's easier to create consistent pressure and disrupt timing in general. I think it's easier to do it from your front than it is your back end. But still, if teams can load it up there and, you know, get you uber protected and throw a couple over the top on you, a la the first play of week 18 against the Texans. Yeah. Say no more.
Another name out there, Eddie Jackson.
Now, you only said that because it was Eddie. If it was Edie Jackson, you wouldn't have said that.
You never know.
He is Eddie Garrison. Do you have anything else to add?
107.5thefan.com for all the written content again.
Thank you.
That you've done.
Mondays, Tuesdays. I'm done teaching, so I guess we could kind of change it up a little bit here.
Oh, you're done?
On that, yes.
How was the semester?
Good, good. I think I told you maybe off air. We had a really energetic group. Very nice. Energetic, smart group.
I can see you didn't get any gray hair from it, so that's good.
They were
good.
Engaged. Well, you got to look closely on that. And it's in there somewhere, trust me. But no, it was fun.
Yeah, I blame Rosie Bowen for those.
certainly. My fifth year down there for that, so had a blast doing that. All right, as Eddie said, 107.5thefan.com, all of that written content. Everybody have a great week. Hope you enjoy the draft coverage. Talk to you next week.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.